Good morning. This is Tina Coffey.
Meg Swecker.
And Sean Sharp.
And we're here at Visti, and we're just going to have a conversation about the things that we've been learning and doing while we've been here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're going to start with Sean, because Sean taught his kickin' workshop yesterday.
I did a 2.5-hour hands-on workshop with my my co-worker, ITRT Sam Phelps, from Floyd County. We did a thing on ExamView Pro, and we taught people how to take a test with there's basically three pieces of software that come with this suite of tools. So we taught them to take a test with the ExamView player, and then we taught them how to make a test with the ExamView test generator, and then how to track all of the results in the ExamView test manager.
Now, is ExamView a software that comes with the particular book series, or is it a free download?
It actually comes with textbooks. So we first got it with our Houghton Mifflin math textbooks, and then we got it when we bought the e-instruction CPS, Classroom Performance System, remote units. It came with that.
Okay.
So we have a site license for our whole district to use this software. And we're trying to do is get teachers to see the light, if you will, about the fact that you don't have to correct paper and pencil, multiple choice, or any kind of exam if you use this.
Right.
Plus, it allows the students an opportunity to practice taking a test in the computer lab, on the computer, like they're taking the SOL test.
Which is really nice.
So, and it's one question per screen, and they pick the next thing, and it goes to the next question. You know, so there's all that stuff that's positive about it. The thing is, it's not necessarily a simple thing to learn. It's not like opening up a word processor and typing away.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these steps you have to go through to get your test published to the local area network, and then assign it to your particular class.
Okay.
Get the password. You know, set all these.
So it's a little tricky.
Yeah.
Is there a bank of questions already?
Yes, there is. There are question banks that come with the textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, ExamView has some question banks, so you can make your and they're SOL based.
Oh,
so you
great.
Literally. If you're teaching, you know, whatever, fifth grade math, you can go in and pull questions from a question bank for a specific SOL.
Hmm.
And then,
that's nice.
And if you have 50 questions in a question bank and your test is only 25 questions, it will randomly pull 25 questions from that bank.
Oh, wow.
But you can go back in and look at those questions and decide, do I want this question? Is this appropriate for my students? Do I get rid of it? Is there another question from the bank I want to include? And so you have a lot of control over how your test is created.
So how does the test look on the screen? Does it look very similar to the test nav, what we use for SOL testing?
Unfortunately not.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the downfalls. It doesn't look that similar. The question is in the left pane, and then in the right pane you've got, which is about, I don't know, maybe a third of the screen, a little less than a third of the screen, fourth of the screen. You've got the buttons to choose A, B, C, D, or however you set up the multiple choice. Or you can use the keyboard to answer.
Do you have any elimination tools or anything like that?
No elimination tools. There's no protractor. There's no ruler.
But it's
not perfect, for sure.
Well, and it's hard to find products that mirror the way TestNav looks, I think.
We're using... not TestNav. We've got the EPATs
that
come out, and because we use the active board systems, and they come with their own personal response systems as well, so they all works together. So we're making flip charts that have all the released items on them so that the kids can practice. The problem is, though, you can only vote A, B, C, D. It doesn't go F, G, H. It only goes to G, I think. It goes to F. Yeah, so we've got six response buttons.
So when you say flip chart, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, sorry. Flip chart is their document.
Okay.
So it's their activity that goes with, and you can create them for anything. We create them for all kinds of things. But we'll take the released items, one per screen.
Right.
And as much as I hate using it for this because it's so test-oriented, but it's what the teachers need right now.
Right, it is.
So one test, one question per screen with their multiple choice answer, and the kids can vote, and then they get real-time data about what the kids are strong with in that particular release area and what not.
Mm-hmm. What they need to cover.
Yeah.
And
personal response systems are so useful in that respect.
Yeah.
So is it one question on the screen, they all vote at the same time, and look at their data? So the teacher can use it for review?
She can.
To analyze what they know and don't know.
And then at the end, she can dump all of that information into a spreadsheet.
Okay.
And she knows that Susan's got clicker one. She always says clicker one. We assign by numbers to keep for the student privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But she can see exactly, and it'll have a little overlay of what the question was.
Mm-hmm.
So she can see exactly what information, where her class is strong, and a big graphical outlay.
Mm-hmm.
Who's strong, who's weak, what areas need to be covered.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part is, you know, taking the time to create the activity or the flip chart, but the data is wonderful.
So yeah.
That probably more than anything has gotten our teachers bonded to using this kind of technology.
Mm-hmm. Because see, and that's our experience. the beginning overhead is a little bit difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice with this. You have to do it a few times. Mm-hmm. But once you've done it, creating a test becomes very easy, mm-hmm. fairly quick, and then you've got the results that
yeah.
you can pull in. And you can actually pull them into Excel, but the ExamView Test Manager has a series of reports.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best one is the item analysis,
mm-hmm.
where it'll put a little icon up indicating for a specific question, a threshold of percent of students that missed that question.
Mm.
So if you say, I want to know, you know, that 50% or 60% of my kids got this question incorrect, you'll see a little icon right there on that question.
Wow.
And if your question's in SOL-based, you can be like, wow, I need to work on this SOL.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's kind of cool.
So now do they take the test all together, or are they taking it from their own?
With ExamView, you've got...
Oh, you're doing it right on the computer.
You do it on the computer, so it's individual. But you can also actually have mm-hmm. them use the clickers.
Right, okay.
So that's kind of...
The nice part with the clickers is that if you get to a question or something when you're using them that you need to remediate on, you can quickly
right.
remediate
see
that
it right then.
Right
that's
there.
Right.
That's mm-hmm. one of the bonuses yeah. to...
And at least at the elementary level, the kids are not shy about saying, I missed that one. Hey, I guessed C when it was B. Why?
They are pretty
you know,
open
I think
about
it's
that.
Probably at the middle school where we don't have... they're just kind of getting used to the whole active board thing.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a lot of that. But at the elementary level, even though we protect their privacy with numbers, they're the first ones to say, I didn't get that one right.
Right.
Why did I miss that?
Right.
And
no.
so it's great for generating class discussion.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well, one other honor, too, that you have that is the VISTI. Talk about the VISTI board.
Well,
John.
Yeah, I guess I ran to be on the VISTI board, and they had an election, and I got enough votes.
Yay!
So there are 12 of us on the board, and we meet every other month starting in July. To talk about VISTI, I guess, and mm-hmm. how the organization runs and what we do. And to be honest, I don't totally know what this is all about because it's the first meeting is today, so I'll go and find out.
Uh-huh.
But I like VISTI a lot. It's a great organization, I think, for supporting technology in the classroom and teachers with technology.
Yes, it is.
I mean, to me, it's just, you know, I went to the, I did a thing last summer at one of their summer camps.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic, you know. So... I'm a big VISTI, you know. If you could see me, I'm
congratulations.
Like,
that's right.
I got my little fist pump going on. So yeah, we'll see how that is. I think it'll be fun, you know. And I hope that, you know, that the board continues to kind of help VISTI do what it does with technology and with teachers, you know, and connect people.
And with ITRTs, they have been really instrumental in helping
yes,
us
they
keep
have.
Our jobs
yep.
and
yes. keeping us organized, helping us network.
That's right.
Right, they have done a nice job.
I know one of the things that I've heard talked about is how VISTI is going to respond to the fact that the NECC conference in 2009 was in Washington,
yeah.
D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, they can only afford to go to one conference.
Right.
So mm-hmm. the NEC conference is an amazing conference. It's,
right.
It's huge. And so how are we going to decide as VISTI
to support that
and have our own conference, or do we do a mini conference? Or, you know, I don't
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't even say that because that's
well
just
right,
my idea,
but no, it's nice that they're even considering that because that really is
right.
looking at the greater good for all of the teachers, and it's not as if the quality of presentation at NEC is better.
Right.
It's just more global because
mm-hmm.
you've got presenters from around the world coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And you're networking with people from across the country rather than just across Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an exciting thing. I've only been to one, and it was really
right.
cool.
And see, I have never been to one and probably would not have an opportunity unless
right.
it's close by.
Right.
Right.
So.
And which one did you go to?
I went to one in Chicago.
Okay.
Years ago.
And I went to San Diego in 2006.
I'm so envious. But I'm so excited about the Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
one because
yeah.
I think that would be one I could afford. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think since there are going to be so many people from this area going, I think that you know, there's the opportunity. If you're going to San Diego or someplace across the country,
right.
you can't necessarily find anyone to share a room with or
right.
any of the
right.
other expenses.
Exactly.
You have to fly in and out. We can drive
right.
up. We can probably, you know.
Exactly.
Find places to
relatives
stay
or friends
yeah,
that may
right,
live
right.
nearby.
Sure, right, exactly. No.
We'll network.
Yeah,
yes.
absolutely. It's very true. So my experience with NEC in 2006 was, and I was telling Tina this earlier, was that it's overwhelming.
Yes.
And I think I didn't have a good strategy. I think I kind of went sort of, I don't know, just sort of, la, 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 let's check this out. And I was overwhelmed. I remember one day coming back to the hotel with a splitting headache. And it was a great day, but I was so tired.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. You know, because they had activities, almost, it felt like 24/7. They actually had GPS activity where you could check out a GPS, go on a geocache, find these little things out and about San Diego area. It was all within walking distance of the convention center.
Oh, wow.
Come back and get a little prize, you know. Wow. But it gave teachers a chance to see what is geocaching, how does this work, how do I use GPS, what's this all about? I mean,
so. When I went, we wanted to learn more about WebQuest, so that tells you how long ago this was. It was sometime in the late, mid to late 90s, and we went out. And I took a pre-conference workshop with Bernie Dodge, and I thought I had arrived. I was like, oh,
yep.
It's the WebQuest guy, and I'm learning from him. Yep. And now it's just so funny, because now I Twitter. He's one of the guys I follow.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, Bernie's talking about his oven range today or something. But back then, so that was the only way to get that kind of information.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and,
yeah.
And it was a huge deal. We tried to get him to come out the next year and train some of our teachers. And
right.
Us off totally. Yeah, Roanoke is not a high vis place, so he was not particularly interested. But but still, in all, it was such a cool experience.
Yeah.
But we were kind of focused on WebQuest, so we kind of did everything WebQuest. Joni went with me, and Jane was, of course, there doing her Jane thing, my boss.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other tech resource teachers went with me, and we wanted to learn about everything we could about WebQuest. So we went to WebQuest workshops, and we wrote WebQuest, and we learned how teachers were using them. And
which is a good strategy, and that's kind of the strategy you've used at this conference, too, with the AT stuff.
Yeah.
So you focused on AT this time?
Well, yeah.
Assistive technology.
The that is how I got to come to this conference, because many other districts, we get to choose one.
Right.
And so... none of our ITRTs are here, and the special ed team needed a technology person on their assistive technology team last year and invited me to go to VISTE.
And you've taught special ed, too.
That is my background.
Right.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That's what I did
I learned something new today.
A long time.
Yes, actually, Meg and I worked for, about 6 months
at
the same school.
Really?
Yeah, and then I got this job, and it took me away.
That's really funny.
So I have been focusing on the AT strand, and what I really loved about it, because I kind of thought assistive technology was, special keyboards and touch screens originally.
Mm-hmm.
But what they are really trying to do is make people understand that assistive technology is for everybody. And so it doesn't have to be a touch screen to be assistive technology. And so what they've really been focusing on this year is a concept of universal learning, which I love, because they're talking about how podcasts can help people learn, and how blogs and wikis can help people learn, and Web 2.0 tools can help people learn. And so it is not at all, I mean, yes, there's all of this about how it can help a learner who struggles with long-term memory, or how it can, but the point is, this is such an inroad for all of technology to help everybody, because even if you don't have a diagnosis of some specific learning issue, these tools help everybody. So I've been totally jazzed about it, and it just convinces me more and more that this is where we need to be. Maybe this will be what will open the doors in my schools. You know, because what I hear, and you guys hear it too.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds like a great project. I'll do it after SOLs are over.
Right.
And I understand that.
It doesn't have to be after SOLs.
Right.
You can just create your classroom, or, you know, as a teacher, set up your classroom with that universal learning in mind.
Right. And
so you have stations set up to help with recording podcasts or listening to podcasts, or, you know.
But, and then that comes down, that's the thing that I struggle with that I see in my classroom, I see when I go into classrooms, is the difference between how we come in with technology and have a way that we think teachers should be teaching, like their teaching model versus how they are teaching.
Right.
And that's always a tough one, because not only are we coming in with technology, but we're also coming in saying, hey, we think you should set up your classroom differently.
Sure, exactly. Yeah.
And that's always a struggle for me. Do you guys have any strategies for that?
No.
I think that, the approach in Floyd County, we have teachers that have been there a long time, taught there for years and years, and this is true for your counties, I'm sure. And so my approach has always been not to do the tidal wave with them, but just one little step at a time. And actually, I had a teacher last week tell me this, and it was specifically related to ExamView Pro. She said, you know, when you show us ExamView Pro, it's great. The problems tend to come with teachers when the comments of, and then you can do this, and then you can do this,
right.
And then you can do this.
And then you can do
this. And so I was like, oh, okay. You know, sort of like, wow, that's helpful for me, because then I know to lay out the basics, and then step back.
Yeah.
Let them take it a little bit, and then when they're ready,
right, then
you know, you do the mm-hmm. next thing. So maybe it's a question of, you know, hey, have you thought about having a podcast station in this part of your room? And here's how we could set it up, here's how it could work, and then let it be. And
right.
then, you know, you see what I mean? So
right.
it's always like, to me, I'm learning it's a gradual one step at a time.
And it is so hard, because I don't know about you all, but after being at a conference like this or seeing great
right.
ideas, I want to come back and tell everybody all
yes.
the great ideas,
yes.
and that's very
yes.
overwhelming.
It is. It mm-hmm. is. And I don't think that there's, I mean, we're asking people to change their basic philosophies.
Right.
And that's never fast.
No.
And
mm-hmm.
so you just keep digging at the mountain with a teaspoon.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while you find something that fits for someone and it makes a tiny difference.
Right.
And honestly, I'm not sure. If I were a classroom teacher and I'd never had the experiences I've had as a tech resource teacher, I think I would be very open to new ideas, because as a special ed teacher, you've got to be. It's whatever
right.
works.
Mm-hmm.
But not that all of them are, but I mean, that was my philosophy to begin with. But I don't think I would be nearly as quick to embrace the things as I have credible understanding that this really will work for my kids. I would be hesitant too, because I'm the one who's accountable for the test scores.
Right.
And the bottom line is, you know, my principal is not going to be happy if I say, well, you know, I thought I'd try podcasting this year, and I'm sorry that my scores are down,
mm-hmm.
but I was given it a try. You know, I'm not sure I would be willing to take that risk either. So I understand
mm-hmm.
where they are, but you know, it's kind of commando. Whenever you can get in there.
It is. It really is. And that's, you bring up a really good point, Meg, with the whole test score issues.
Yeah,
you know,
that is the issue.
It is the issue. And now, in terms of that, one of the things that we do with in Floyd County is we have the Test for Higher Standards and Reports Online system,
mm-hmm.
where they give these tests, and we're eventually, I think we're close to going to an online format for these types of tests, these benchmark tests.
Mm-hmm.
They give them three times a year, fall,
right.
winter, spring. And then they dump all their scores into Excel. And what we're doing now with our teachers is getting them to, in Excel, for each student and each strand of a particular subject,
mm-hmm.
create a graph, that's a bar graph that shows their fall score and their next score.
Oh, okay.
And then give that to the kid, they can take it home. And so they can, and the kids can actually see, wow, so this is what I did at the first test, this is what I'm doing now, so you can see progress. Or you can see the other way around if that's
mm-hmm.
happening.
Right.
So it's sort of trying to take the tools that the teachers are using to help with the test scores
right.
and show them how technology can work with them.
Within that.
And maybe even then open up doors for other,
mm-hmm.
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know. I also find it hard that I often gravitate towards the teachers that want to use technology.
Right.
And so...
That's a hard one, too.
It's really hard, because that's, you know.
I feel like if you start with them, and they are often your best cheerleaders.
Right.
Right.
And so, and that's one thing I tell my teachers all the time. You know, Courtney Jones, one of our other ITRTs,
yeah, sure. mm-hmm.
She summed it up nicely last year when she was telling, and when she was interviewing for us, to work with us, actually. But she said, those people will be your best cheerleaders, and so I always ask them when they're done, if you liked what we did, tell everybody. I thought, well, yeah, because I mean, that's basically, I think, what most of us do.
Right.
But I thought that summed it up nicely, because word of mouth is our best advertising. So if you can get a couple of teachers in a school that are willing to
try
exactly. some things,
exactly.
then,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but it's very grassroots, and that's always slow.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Now, do either of you work at the high school level?
I have middle school. That's a
middle school. Okay.
Oh no, I'm just elementary.
And we're K through 7 in my schools. I had the experience of working at the high school a little bit because my colleague.
So high school starts at
eighth grade
in Floyd.
8-12,
okay.
Yeah, and he was out for several days, and so they needed some support up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a different experience.
Oh yeah.
It's a different culture.
Yes,
I am sure it is.
Just different. I mean, it's, you know.
You are dealing with content experts
yes,
there.
Yes. And so they came to me and said, hey, I want to be able to set up this class and use this technology. How can we do that? And it was like, okay, let's sit down and figure this out. You know, it was just a different kind of thing than the elementary levels. I mean, elementary teachers are teaching all subjects.
Right.
They're generally a lot more flexible, I find.
But they're more flexible, but then on the other hand, they don't want to spend a lot of time to do one thing because that's the only time that they're going to teach it that year. And then, whereas middle school and high school, I've found, they'll spend more time making a smart board presentation or whatever because they use it 3 or 4 times in a day. It's a different approach.
It is, absolutely. So
what have you been doing here at the conference?
I tell you, one of the most exciting things that I have seen was the Marzano strategies that goes with the book, Classroom Instruction
That Works.
And there was an ITRTA, I think her name is Stacy Miller, and she has put together a whole website with resources that go along with the strategies that are taught in the book. And it's ready-to-use stuff like Kidspiration templates, Inspiration templates, Kid Picks. And she's pretty much Kidspiration, Inspiration, Kid Picks, and then like Word and Excel. But she's mostly based, those were really the only three extra programs that I saw within her stuff, which is great because a lot of schools don't have all the extra software.
Right.
But those are pretty basic ones that they have. And then she had websites, but they all match the strategies within the book, which is wonderful
to
take back because I know my division's been, our school, both my schools have read that book, our division's doing in-services, and then on the interactive note-taking, are you guys familiar with interactive note-taking, which sounds like technology, but
but
let me clarify,
it does,
it's not really...
Interactive notebooks,
absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
And it's a lot of highlighting and cutting and pasting, and it's strategies to help kids remember... to understand their notes better. I think it's more concept-based rather than factual, putting the facts within a framework of the concepts. But she had strategies for using technology within that. So her whole presentation is something that I can take back and say, here are things that we are trying to do in our school, but here are ways you can use technology within it. So I am so excited about it.
She has worked a ton on that. My whole school system follows Marzano as well.
Okay.
And so there have been book studies in all of my schools.
Right.
And the administrators strongly buy in
to Marzano. Wow.
And so while they don't always see the connection between the natural Marzano strategies and technology, and now, exactly, I can go in and say, okay, so you're working on graphic organizers, and you want graphic organizers to help your teachers understand or your students to understand, well, look at all of these.
Right.
And while before I could say, well, with Kidspiration or with Inspiration, depending on the school, you can make graphic organizers, and that sounds like blah, 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 graphic organizers.
Right, exactly.
So now there's something concrete to show
them.
Funny.
Right, and ready-to-use stuff, which is great, too.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
That's probably
we haven't bought into the Marzano thing yet. At all in Floyd.
Really?
It's coming.
I'm sure.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, no,
it's
good.
It really
sure
is.
It's good, yeah.
It's very,
yeah.
His stuff is data-driven and research-based.
Yep.
And it's not anything earth-shattering. He's not coming up with strategies that good teachers haven't been using, but he's found a way to name them, identify them, isolate them, and tell why they work, because he's really researching.
Got it.
The book is a little dry.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's written by a researcher, but he really... kind of gets how kids need to learn. So
we're doing a podcast. We're recording a podcast. So I'll catch up with you later.
She ran
from the interruption.
It would be worse as if we were taking pictures.
Oh, boy.
Well, and then also, I enjoyed Hall Davidson since I was able to get into one of his on how to use the iPod in the classroom, which is something that I'm not sure I'll be able to use right away, but it was great technical information that I was really excited about.
So did he really show you how to make an iPod work with an LCD projector?
Yes, he did.
How do you do that? Is it got USB plugs or something?
No, he uses the... you buy the cord that plugs into the headphone card on the iPod that has the RCA jacks.
Right.
And you just use... Yeah, but you
flip
have to flip them because Apple... when they wanted you to buy their product, they flipped the red and the yellow on the RCA jack. So in order to get it to work, if you buy like a generic one, you have to switch the colors.
Hmm.
That was a really great tip to walk away with.
So if you've got the video iPod, you use the RCA jacks, plug it into the projector, and you can project whatever's on your iPod.
Right, or on the TV or whatever.
Right.
So,
on the TV, sure.
And he's from United Streaming, Discovery Education now. And so he talked about putting video clips on your iPod and just walking in a classroom 1 minute, showing a video, getting all the kids excited and jazzed, and then, boom, right there.
Yep.
Interestingly, one of the strategies, I went to a workshop yesterday on literacy failure and how to break the cycle of literacy failure. And one of the things they were saying, once you've gotten fluency down, which is one issue altogether, but once the kids can finally decode, and there's a whole set of strategies to help them be able to decode quickly enough to make memory,
right,
and put it in their long-term memory. But once you do that, then you have to work on comprehension. And one of the strategies they were talking about is using a video clip, because that's so engaging and it involves different senses, and then having like three different passages that they would have to identify that was true based on what they saw in the video clip, which is so similar to the things that we've been doing in TTI, but that's so United Streaming and Discovery Education based.
Right.
And I thought, wow. And this is, again, a researcher from Vanderbilt who's done this, and he gave us all his book. He was really very nice, and he was very good and very research-based, but again, the whole tie-in about, yes, you got to use technology, and there's all kinds of drill and practice programs that will help them decode more quickly, but what he was really pushing at is, once you've got them there, let's work on comprehension, and do not continue to make them read. It hurts for them to read because they don't understand what they're reading yet.
Right.
So give them something like this. Give them some choices where they have to, and they said, and we watch.
So you practice the strategy without having to do the decoding, but you're still practicing the strategy so that.
Because they are reading, but he said one thing that we know works is that people get better at reading if they reread the same thing. But reluctant readers don't want to do that because they've already read it once. It's boring. Okay, well, that makes total sense.
And it was hard enough the first time.
So if you give them a video clip on how to assemble, how to assemble a kite or whatever, and then you've got three different passages that have varying amounts of true and false information in it based on that reading level, basically you're getting them to read two or three times, but they're having to evaluate and analyze while they're doing it.
Wow.
And now teachers have been doing that for years, but in text. And reluctant readers are going to resist the text a little bit, so...
Well, one of the things, to come back to ExamView Pro... This software allows you to embed media files into a text.
That's great.
And
when there's a media file embedded to a question, you click on the media button, and it opens up whatever program is needed to either play the MP3 or the video. So you could actually do that with ExamView Pro.
That's great.
Take a video clip and link it into that specific question. The kids come to that question. They watch this video clip, then find whichever response is the most accurate or whatever. They click on the media button and it plays the movie, they watch it. And of course they can flip back and forth and watch the movie as much as they need to.
That's really good.
Yeah, so it is cool.
And then you can do stuff like that with Kidspiration too. Put the video clip in Kidspiration and have the kids do a map of the main ideas.
Absolutely.
There's so many things you can do with video.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that that's not necessarily, that's not outside the realm of strategies that teachers might be willing to try sometime.
Right.
But knowing that someone's done research on it and has documented that, yes, this will help your struggling readers, and we have all of those tools because everybody's got United Streaming, pretty much, at least in this area. So that's just more fuel.
And then I think, take your kids that are not struggling readers necessarily and give them a flip video camera and say, go make a video and then make your statements.
Exactly.
Them create
Have them create it. How fun would that be?
And then I also saw, I can't remember if it was Hall Davidson or somebody else was talking about pulling in the video clip, muting into Movie Maker, muting the sound and having the kids narrate the video themselves.
Sure. Yeah, because you can pull a lot of their stuff into Movie Maker.
Right. It has to be editable clips.
It has to be editable, but most of them are. And we've had kids take stuff into Movie Maker and just cut out the chunk of that 2-minute video clip that really talks about whatever they're doing their research on and adding it to their presentation.
Right.
I hadn't thought about making them narrate that. That's a great
idea. I hadn't thought about that either. I thought that was really
Yep.
a good way. Wow. Either you watch the video ahead of time or don't even listen, don't even hear what the United mm-hmm. Streaming narration mm-hmm. is and mm-hmm. have to do your research sure. to go along with that clip.
Yeah, that's great.
Wow. So much you can do with technology.
There is.
No kidding.
Here we are to say that.
That's right. That's right.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but it's getting time for yeah. the next session, and I want to go get
yes.
a seat. So.
Okay,
well, I'm going to run back to my car and
make sure
my passport for it and my external hard drive are still there. And
I'm going to call and make sure your house is still there, too.
There's no one to call.
Yeah, we probably should clarify because we hadn't started recording before.
Yeah, I almost burned my house down today, Steve. But I think I didn't, and I brought the dogs to daycare, and I ran out with my passports and my external hard drive.
So, and she's an amazing expert.
I was going to say, the reason she was in a rush was to get here to do this podcast.
That's right.
For you,
and she's in an amazingly good mood for all this stuff.
I mean, it just identifies the idiocy or the craziness you think about. The stuff that goes through your mind, it's like, wow, what if I did? What if there is a spark behind the wall? How do I turn that out? Okay, I'll turn off the lights, but what if that's enough? Well, what's the most important stuff in the house? The dogs, the passport,
and the external hard drive.
I'm tried and true in the geek world now.
The message is back up. Yeah. Always back up your data.
That's right, exactly. And then have it where you can take it with you if there's a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, other crazy women are running around their house grabbing pictures and stuff. No, I just grab my hard drive.
And we're right there with you. We understand that.
I know that's the scary part.
Yep.
All right, okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.